Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have a talk cast every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. And if you want to participate on the web, just go to the Talk's website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702 or Starfleet Universe On Call, and you'll find me there. Also, of course, we have a co-broadcast over on twitch.tv. So go to twitch.tv/SFU On Call, and you'll find us there. I also try to keep a close eye out on that chat room, since the chat room on actually the talk show one is usually very, very, very quiet. So most of the people are over on Twitch. So if you want to join us, hey, come and join us over on Twitch. And, of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I've got multiple accounts there. One of those, of course, is sfuoncall. So if you want to find out the topics, and also I post up a link every single week of the YouTube video, if you want to see my lovely face, or if you want to listen to it on YouTube, hey, if you want to, follow me there. That would be great. And, of course, my personal account is Paul Franz. It's PAULFRNZ. Yes, I'm one of those lucky ones. I got it on Twitter early. And just a reminder that I'm, if you want to follow me, I'm an avid O's fan. I love my O's. I love technology, and also I love being a Catholic. So if any of those bother you, don't follow me. And of course, the tertiary account is Franz Games, which is specifically for keeping an eye on what's happening at Franz Games when it comes to Starfleet Warlord and SFB Online and FedCom Online. So if you want to find out when the latest update to the client happens, follow me there. I try to keep it relatively quiet, low bandwidth. So if you don't want to just have your feed just completely inundated by Franz Games posts, that's the way to do it. On the other ones, I'm pretty quiet too. Obviously, SFB On Call gets like two posts a week, but that's mainly an announcement for what's happening here. And of course, this lovely talk cast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Not much happening at ADB this week, though. Of course, just a reminder that today is Veterans Day, and I want to thank all those veterans throughout the years, live and dead, who've served our country well in protecting us from our enemies outside and inside the country, from I'm thinking about all the way back to the Civil War. So thank you all, you veterans. Moving on to SFB Online tournament, the Sapphire Star tournament number 9, it actually has started. Round 1 has started. We actually had a minor issue where the same person was in two parts of the bracket, which is not good. I'm sorry, guys. I know you like to play twice as many games, be able to have two chances of actually winning. It's like, I'm sorry, that won't happen. So we got that's all fixed. Seth is put in the place of one of the Joshes. So that's all good there. Just a reminder, if you want to see something that's kind of an interesting matchup, we have the Andromedan, which is I'm flying, versus the Romulan King Eagle. Yes, the King Eagle. And that's going to happen Sunday night, 7 p.m. I'm going to be facing the Hood, which is going to be interesting. I know Jason from many years back. He actually came to Origins one time. So this should be interesting, because if I recall correctly, he is in Australia. So, it's going to be like morning time there. Morning time, Monday morning. By the way, moving onward and forward, not much happening when it comes to online client. The client, I have not had a chance to work on it this week. Obviously, I had those things that I reported on last week. And also, when it comes to the FedCom library, no progress there. So with that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one little Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, actually, it's just me. So for those hoping for Barry, well, I'm sorry to disappoint you that Barry's not here tonight. It's just me and probably whoever else shows up on Twitch. So it's gonna just a reminder for those who are not listening to the podcast. Yeah, Andros do rule. We'll see how much they rule on Sunday. I'll bring that up because I brought that up in the news portion. I'll just reiterate it here for those people who are not listening to the podcast. And people in the podcast, they can suffer for just a little bit. The quick reiteration. Ugh, I need to work on that. But two things. Number one, of course, this is Veterans Day. Thank you, veterans, for all of your service, for keeping us safe. You know, you know, somebody has to do it, and I thank you for stepping up and being those men and women that are willing to put their lives on the line for us. Us chickens. Number two, for those of you that are interested in I'm gonna consider it's gonna be an interesting game just because of the matchup. And the matchup, one of them I'm playing in, which is gonna be 7 p.m. Eastern time. And that is going to be, I'm going to play against Jason Gray, who's flying the Romulan TKE, yes, the King Eagle, versus moi, who will be flying the Andromedan. So we have the King Eagle versus the Andromedan. So that's going to be a very interesting game. So if you're available and you're interested, obviously if you're not interested, you have to say, okay, well, whatever. I'm too busy on Sunday as it is. Sunday, 7 p.m. It's going to be interesting. I will be playing then. Hopefully, we can get through the game, or at least get most of the game through. I'm going to do my best to pre-process any Starfleet Warlord stuff that you normally do on Sundays, and hopefully people can get it done. Hey, Iggy, Chris, Dave, good to see you here. Yes, and again, it's Sunday. Oh, sorry. 7 p.m. Eastern time. I forgot. I got to remember to mention that. Eastern Standard Time, we will be playing. So if you're Eastern Seaboard, you know, obviously it's easy. If you're on the Pacific Coast, much easier because, of course, that means it's like 4 o'clock versus 7 o'clock. Now, if you're across the pond in England, that's a lot more difficult because that's like midnight. So for those of you interested, come and join either. It's going to be interesting because it's going to be one of those few games that in the tournament, there's one thing that the Andromeda can do, but it's rarely ever done. And that is that the Andromeda has the option to either use a T-bomb or use a PA mine. And this is one of those times I'm contemplating this. I'm not saying I'm going to do it, but I'm definitely contemplating it because of that R. I'm thinking about taking the PA mine, which will then take the PA mine. It'll go. It will take, if I recall correctly, it's 20 points away from the torpedo, so it makes it a lot easier to handle. I think it's 20. It's either 10 or 20, and I can't remember off the top of my head. It's been so long since I've used a PA mine. Because in tournament play, you have the choice of either one. And most of the time, even against the Gorns or the normal Romulans, or the Romulan Firehawk or the KR, you know, normally those, you choose to take the T-bomb because you want it as a distraction, you know, something to have it so that your opponent can't come and get close to you. Or in the case also, there's the old flash cube effect. So you have the possibility of a flash cube. Now, I got to remember that the TKE also has its own T-bomb. Now, the T-bomb can't be transported out like it can with the Andromedan, but you can still drop it out. You know, I'm not sure if I... Yeah, Chris, I got to look at the rules of PMI myself. They can drop it out, and I still think to this day that it should have an NSM. You know, the 35-point nuclear space mine. Now, obviously, if you get it so your opponent can hit the nuclear space mine, that, I'm not going to say game over, but it's a good bit of, like, that's when your shield is, one shield is gone. Now, if the shield was down, then it's toast. But here's the thing. I always felt about the nuclear space mine in the tournament play. And that is, if you can have a King Eagle apply that. Now, the mine is not hidden. It's not, I have to double check if the normal rules, if normally the nuclear space mine is hidden placement. The normal King is, yeah, King Eagles do. They have nuclear space. Every single one of the old ones do. Yeah, PM mines are for or plasma, and that's why, you know, I'm thinking about taking it. Well, although I'm thinking of taking it because of the plasma R. That's the main reason why. But I will research that a little bit over the upcoming days. Yeah. So I thought they were too, except for, I have to double check because I could, okay, I have to double check on hidden mines because I think with a minefield, I'm not sure if they're hidden or not. I'm pretty sure that they're not hidden in a minefield, but if you lay a mine, they're not hidden. And in that case, the mine would be, the hidden mines are optional at that point. So, anyhow, I think it's going to be an interesting game. That's actually not the matchup I want to talk about this evening. And let's put it this way. What I'll do next week for you guys is I will go over the game with you guys. I will record it. I'm not sure if I got... Depends upon if the game's complete, I might do a full game overview. If the game is not complete, then I'll just talk about what happened in the game. Because obviously the problem with the recording and showing you guys the recording is I show you everything that I'm doing. And in that case, Jason Gray could actually look to see what I was doing and if we're still in the middle of the game. So, and I'm sure you guys understand that. I guarantee you, unless something happens where Jason can't play or I can't play on Sunday, if we play on Sunday, I will give you guys at least a rundown on what happened, or at least where it is or stands in that game, assuming that we are unable to complete it that day. So we'll just have to wait and see. But getting back to the topic for this evening, or getting to the topic for this evening, what I'm going to be going over this evening is a matchup which is, I think, an interesting one, just for the plain simple fact that it has its Saltorian as one of the opponents. So it's going to be Saltorian versus the Gorn. Now, Saltorian, anything versus the Gorn is nothing that's overall that interesting, I feel. Just because of anything against the Gorn, it's pure plasma tactics. There's no possibility of a cloaking device. There's no, in the case of the IAC, of course, the IAC has a PPD. You know, nothing, no other weapons. It's nothing fancy, fancy schmancy. The only thing that the Gorn has that's kind of special overall is it has two shuttle bays. Two shuttle bays can make a big difference when it comes to knife fighting, in my mind. Because of the one thing that two shuttle bays will allow any ship to do is if that ship uses suicide shells, which, of course, if you're Gorn, you're flying a Saltorian, that's what you're going to be doing. I don't see a Gorn ever charging the two special shells that they're allowed to have at the beginning of the game as weapon status 3. There's two special shuttles to them to be ready as wild weasels. There's no reason to it. I don't think that the Gorn is going to be that scared about the particle cannons. Because the particle cannons, overall, are weaker than, you know, they fire like disruptors. When it comes to damage, overall, obviously, when you get really close in, disruptors do better. And they have the to hit of a photon. So, nothing to be really that scared of when it comes to the Gorn, where he would actually want the EW shift, you know, because of that's the one thing that is in. I think I find it's interesting in tournament play when it comes to the tournament rules. And that is, you can have EW, per se. You know, only special versions. You can't allocate EW, but you can get an EW shift, six ECM, by using a wild weasel, because a wild weasel automatically does that to the ship. So you have a +2 shift. If you're you know, have the wild weasel. And of course then there is the biggest EW shift, which is cloaking device. You can have it so that while you are decloaking, you can decide on that you want to use the EW shift during it versus range, which is interesting. But you know, there's no way to counteract the EW shifts that are allowed in the tournament game, you know, the tournament rules. You can't apply any ECCM. So you can apply EW for protection, but that's it. But of course, what are the two when it comes to EW protection? Wild Weasel, which is you have to be going less speed for or slower. And when it comes to cloaking, yes, you can go to a higher rate of speed, but it's a power-hungry device. It takes a lot of power. Two, and then you might have to slowly ratchet down your speed, because if you're cloaking, one thing, you plan to cloak, the whole idea is that you do a cloak, and you might do some downshifts, or downshifts, upshifts, downshifts. The idea being that if you're unable to break the lock on, if you're trying to break the lock on of your opponents on your ship, and of course, because as soon as you do that, then it goes from, I think, +4 to like +10. There's an additional +6 shift on things. It's awful. But anyway, for that, the thing is that, you might have to have multiple chances, and as a desperation move, in some cases, when you're cloaking, you have to do an ED, you have to emergency deceleration as your last hope, because speed 0 puts a great, you know, the biggest shift possible. I think it's like a -2 because when it comes to the cloaking calculator, when it comes to maintaining the ability to have the lock on, part of that is the speed of the ship. So that's why you do, go from like speed 10 to speed 9, just back to speed 10, and then back to speed 9. The idea is when you go from 10 to 9, that gives you an additional chance to roll the dice and break the lock on. And also because the ship, the number gets worse. So he has to make another lock on roll. Then you go back up to 10, nothing happens. But then down to 9 again, boom, the guy has to roll again. And then if that doesn't work, then you do an ED, and then the shift gets much harder. It makes it really hard to retain that. But of course, at that point, you are shooting, not completely shooting yourself in the foot, but you make yourself a lot more difficult because you're now stopped and you have to get going again. So come on, go Ravens. Ravens are losing 3-6 against the Dolphins at halftime. Boy, talk about the low scoring games. Dang. Onward and forward for all involved. And that's I wanted to bring up the SSDs for those who are on the video. So you can see the Gorn here, and you can see the Saltorian here. And here's a reminder of the particle cannon to hit the table, which is, of course, 0 automatic hit for 8 points of damage versus, I know, disruptors do 10. 1, range 1, it's 1 to 5. Range 2, range 2 to 4, it's 1 to 4 to hit. But range 2, you get 8 points of damage. Range 4, out to range 4, you get 6 points of damage. All the way out to range 8, you get 6 points of damage. And 5 to 8, it's a 50% shot of hitting, which is, as I said, it's like a photon torpedo. So if you're between 5 and 8, you got a 50% chance of actually hitting. Now, as I've talked about before, when it comes to this ship, the Saltorian, I'll get back to that in just a moment. I was going to start about tactics, and I just want to go over the Gorn ship real quick. It's got the 8 phaser ones in that weird array. That is, it's on any particular arc, you got at least 4 phaser ones. Now, for example, left side, if you're out here, let's say shield number 6. Now, shield number 6, I'm not talking about the oblique. If you're on the oblique, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. If you're on off shield number 2 on the oblique, again, it's 5. Pass the oblique on either one of those, so it's you are still on shield number 6, but you're out of the FA arc. That's when you get down to 4, because you got these ones here, the rear ones, which are left arc rear and right arc rear. That's the two of them. One's left, one's right. And then directly aft, of course, you've got 6. And shield number 4. Oh, sorry, not 4. Shield number 5, back in this quadrant over here, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4 again. So you always have 4 phaser ones facing you. Now, that's good because of it's got a turn mode of D. And, of course, this also has the LP, RP, and left side, right, LP, RP plasmas, which overall I like. When it comes to plasmas, I like RP-LP setup, where basically they're cross arc. Because the great thing about that, about having LP and RP in my mind, is that now you've got weapons which you can fire out your back shields. Shield number 5 and shield number 3, you've got weapons out those arcs. And when it comes to the Gorn, that's even more important because of you've got 4 phaser 1. So even if you had your opponent coming up your butt, you know, coming in on shield number 5 or shield number 3, not even shield number 4. Shield number 4 is not that good. But let's say, because it's easier to do a shield number 3, shield number 5. You know, because you only just turn it so that instead of guys right behind you, you turn. But of course, right behind you, you know, right directly rear, well, you got 6 phaser 1s. That can hurt him greatly. But, you know, 3 and 5, he's fine. If he's gaining on you, you still got 1 plasma S and 1 plasma F, and you've got 4 phaser 1s. So, yeah, it's not your full brunt of all the destruction power that you can probably give him. But the thing is, that gives you have a lot more firepower than, let's say, a Klingon. A Klingon has 4 disruptors. Problem? All those 4 disruptors are forward arc. So if anybody comes in on shield number 5, and this is also one of the reasons why the term B is kind of important for the Klingons. If that happens, all they've got, you've got your 3 phaser 1s from the forward extended arcs. You've got maybe 1 phaser, 1 additional phaser 1, so you've got 4 phaser 1s. And you got 2 phaser 2s and a phaser 3. Now all your heavy weapons are out of arc. Now, the other guy, a little different, but also a totally different ship involved there. Because the thing is with the LDR is, as I mentioned last week or week before, I forget. I think it was week before. And that is with the LDR, it's one of the only tournament ships that has FX disruptors in the in the tournament. Yep. Okay. Thanks, Chris. It was 2 weeks ago. Now, so when it comes to the tactics, when it comes to the Gorn, he's going to use standard plasma ballet tactics. You know, overall, standard plasma ballet tactics. He's going to be flying around the board. Initial battle pass. He's going to want to come straight in at you. The whole thing being is he wants to launch his plasmas at you, and he wants you to turn. So that basically you are always running or dealing with plasma some way. You know, either you are using your phasers to knock down this plasma, or you're using the speed of your ship to run away from the plasma. One of those two. That's what the Gorn wants. Because if you're running away, you're not attacking. If you're attacking his plasma, you have less to attack him with. Standard. And obviously, the question always comes into being with me is, okay, how to attack a plasma player, period. And I've overall not successfully done that. Not just because the reason I'm not really that successful is because you normally are trying things other than standard tactics. You know, standard tactics, will they win me the game? Probably. Because, see, here's the thing. Especially when you got something like the Seltorian or the Fed or the Klingon. That is that, you know, or probably the Tholian too. But what I'm talking about is ships that don't have a lot of expendables. Because, yeah, the Klingon has expendables, but will you be launching them at a... Depends. But in the case of the Satorian, he explicitly doesn't have any expendables. So that means long-term, what you're waiting for, this is what you... When you're flying against plasma, and the plasma wants to do plasma ballet, what is the thing that you're trying to do against the plasma ballet? You're trying to mess up the timing of the plasma. Because the plasma player wants to time it so that he's always, every three turns, he's got you. Bum, 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 bum. Now, that means, usually that means because of direct fire, usually works on like a two-turn thing. And that's the same thing can happen with the Saltorium. Now, Saltorium is a different kettle of fish than most direct fire ships. And we'll get to that in just a moment. But... so the idea is you're trying to mess up the timing so that he will never have, he'll be basically weak. And normally the way that happens is that if the plasma player launches a lot of plasma F, plasma S combinations. And, obviously they can avoid that in some cases. What will happen? The question is, how is the plasma player going to start it? There's multiple ways of starting it. You can start with the feign attack. The feign attack is that you launch two plasma S's. One's real, one's fake. You don't know which one it is. Now, obviously, a plasma player can just to mess up your timing, mess you up completely, is that he can say, okay, I'm going to launch both real. And then you're really stuck. Because, that's the thing that you always have to keep in your mind. Because in theory, you should not, he should not be launching both plasma S's. Because if you're able to get rid of those plasma S's, he's down to two plasma F's for three turns. Well, actually, really two, because in two turns you can do a fast load Fs, but he doesn't want to use his fast load Fs unless he really has to. So that's one of those things that you would never want to. And he launches two plasma S's on your defensive measure. You would never want to actually. Wild Weasel, because you assume that they're both real, and you Wild Weasel, and it's only one, you're stuck. You're slowed down. He's got the initiative. And as they say in SFB, speed is life. And that is truly the case. Now, the other one, is obviously, the starting is Plasma S, Plasma F. The idea being that at least one of those is real and go with that approach. And sometimes both of them are, both are real. Well, the F always real. But the reason why you launch the F with the S is so that even if the S is fake, you still have some damage that you can give them. So even, if your opponent decides to take their chances and run right through it, they're still going to take at least 20 points of damage. But that's one of those times that you really have to know your opponent if you actually want to ever do that. Most of the time, you assume that at the very least, the F's real and the S might be real, and the S, and so that you will turn away. Period. Because no matter what, you're not going to, if you launch a single S, without an F, the person's going to run right through it. fake or real, they're going to run right through it. Not because of, basically because they can phaser down a single plasma S, so it won't take down the shield, and it's only going to affect one shield. That's versus an enveloper plasma S, which is another opening move for a plasma. And if you're a plasma player's opponent decides to run through it, well, they just knocked off 10 points off every single shield. So somewhere between a third to a half of their shields are gone. Note, I've done that. Has it worked out? No. The only time that works out, if you run through it, is that you have to get into overloaded runes. You got to make them pay for what you just did. And the problem is my timing has been poor. That the plasma player has been able to get the range such that within that turn, I can't get to overloaded range. I end up, closest I've ever gotten is range 9. So, with range 9, I can't do overloads, and therefore I can't inflict as much damage as I really need to make up for it. So, that's why I've never that has not worked out well. But given that I know what you shouldn't do, I can definitely tell you what you should do, which is standard tactics, which is run away. You're going to run away. Now, the Seltorian, I have talked about the Seltorian and certain things that I always have to decide on as a Seltorian player. Here's the gotcha. I don't know what other Seltorian players do. I know what I do, which is, to me, there is two ways of starting out. And I'll just go through them really quickly for those who have not heard them. I'm going to be flying the Seltorian fast, or I'm going to fly the Seltorian heavy. Fast means particle cannons, which I love. I'm going to have them so they're charged only to standard, they're only to overloaded level. So that's 1.5 points of energy per particle cannon. So that's a total of 6 points of power. Now, if I was going to go for the heavy approach, fill up the particle cannons all the way up to the brim, which is 5 points. And to hold that, it costs you 2.5 points of energy for every particle cannon. Now, that means instead of being 6, it's 10. So you have 4 less points of energy, which means that, so it's heavier, it goes slower. Because no matter what, the rest of it is going to be pretty much the same. You're going to have the same amount of energy used for your special shuttles, whether it's two wild weasels or two suicide shuttles, which I would rarely ever use suicide shuttles when it comes to Seltorian. I'd only use it if I thought I would never need a wild weasel. And that's a rare bird indeed. Obviously, Tholians are one that I would definitely use suicide shuttles. The other one is, of course, the Lyran, and possibly these days the Fed, maybe, because the Fed actually has drones. So that map, you're always going to have 2 points towards special shuttles, period. Obviously, you don't want, if you don't want to charge anything, you don't have to charge anything. You want now, okay. So, and then so the rest of the numbers pretty much play out. They're the same numbers. The only thing that might modify your numbers at all is speed versus reinforcement, and that's about it. I mean, I'm talking about the first battle pass. That's how you start the game. After you start the game, then there's other decisions on what you do. Because of, okay, you got three shield crackers. Well, web breakers. But in the case of, if you're not flying against a Tholian, they only work in shield cracker mode. Shield crackers are nice. They hit out to range 10 for 4 points of damage. From range 6 to 10, they're a 50% shot of hitting. 3 to 5, 2/3, 1 to 2, 5/6, and automatic hit at range 0. And that's 4 points of damage, 2 points to charge, 0 points to hold. So, given that, that's a nice little additional weapon. And so you can fly pretty fast. And don't forget, the Saltorian has hot warp. They can go faster than the other one, anybody else, because it's got 32 warp. So that means instead of being only can hit at speed 26, it can hit at speed 28. The great, and obviously, with that, speed 28, you know, that can make a big difference when it comes to heading. And more importantly, as I said, speed is life. Speed is also initiative. And so that's the good thing about being able to head at speed 28 versus speed 26. Is that you can have, you might have be able to get that initiative that normally you couldn't, because against the Gorn, who is not hot, does not have hot warp, and therefore his top speed is 26 before he can hit, you might be able to get the low, you know, jump on him at speed 28. Because if he hits at speed 26, you can counter hit at speed 28 and get into a better position. And of course, here's one thing that people, my opponents that when I fly a Saltorian forget like 50% of the times. It only happens the first time that they fly against it, which is they forget that I can head at speed 28, and of course invariably. Up during the game, they go, how fast can what's the top speed can hit? And that's when I tell them it's like speed 28, because I'm not gonna lie. So let's go, oh, okay. So then they have to keep that in mind, which again, it's an advantage. If they have to focus on that, it's like, oh, you know, if I can't just. Especially because both the Gorn and the Saltorian both are Terminal D. So when it comes to order of precedence, the only thing that's going to define who goes first is going to be speed. You know, because it's not like in the case of a tie. In the case of a tie, you go simultaneous. You know? And that, for most part, you know, that doesn't matter when it comes to long distances. It's only when you get close, that really matters, and that's when that speed 28 and the ability to hit makes a big difference. Now, Saltorian versus Gorn, which one would I choose? Now, there's also one other thing that I feel like you have to choose. Now, I'm not sure how many people think like this. I have not talked to other people about this situation, which is, I feel like there's two ways to deal with seeking weapons, period. And I guess this comes down, this philosophy comes down from flying the Andromedan so much. The Andromedan has only one option. That's speed. It has no option to sit and spin. Sit, launch a wild weasel, and spin. It has no options. Now, all the rest of the galactic ships, they have an option. But I'm not sure how many people actually think about this, which is you can either plan on using wild weasels, basically planning on stopping, which is good in some cases, especially still touring the Lyran and LDR, those that have a heavy, including the Fed, who have a heavy weapons, which take a lot of energy. Nope. Chris, I don't play Effany. Started reading the rules, never got through them all. But anyhow, the question is, do you use speed versus seeking weapons, or do you use wild weasels? Plan on, at some point in the game, stopping, sitting still, wild weasel away your seeking weapons, and then deal with that situation, i.e. being very slow speed for so long and then coming back up to speed. Now, the worst case scenario is if you have to ED, immersive deceleration. That's the worst case scenario. If you can plan for it, you can have it so it's not too bad. But also, that has to be planned. I mean, really planned. As in, the seeking weapons have to be close to you at the beginning of your turn. The idea being there is that you're going speed 4 at the beginning of the turn. Have it so that, boom, the seeking weapons hit the wild weasel. You go, if you time it right, which you can, it's not that hard to time it right when you've got the seeking weapons close in at the beginning of the turn. Have it so they hit, and then you jump up your speed immediately from 4 to 14. You can do it. It's not fun. Because of you're stuck at speed 4, and at the same time, the timing has to be down pat. Versus completely relying on your speed to run around like a freaking nut, and use speed and using your phasers to knock them down. Now, when it comes to plasma, again, against the Gorn, what would I do if I have the two choices. I can go for speed or I can go for wild weasels. Now, of course, depending upon which one I decide on that end front, that will also make the decision on whether I want to be fast or heavy. And most against the Gorn? The question is, how do I feel personally, and I think obviously every player has to evaluate themselves, and that is, how do I feel like I can actually get the timing down when it comes to the plasma torpedoes so that they will hit my ship? Time it right so that I can keep my speed down to a minimum. Obviously, as I pointed out, the whole idea of just sitting and spinning is actually sometimes a good thing. The issue with sitting and spinning is, especially in the Kings of the Gorn, is that you've just given up initiative. And more importantly, when it comes to the Gorn or any multi-turn arming weapon opponent, Well, you've given them the opportunity to do nothing. To go around the board nice and slow, use all their energy to recharge all of their weapons, and then come in. And that's always the difficult part. You know, you just given up that initiative. And personally, I don't like doing that. So even if I would use Swall Wiz, I would probably never ever stop unless I was forced to. You know, that's he's coming in, I'm coming in, and unfortunately I have got myself pinned against the wall. So I can't escape. You know, he's coming in and I'm pressed up against the wall, you know, the terminal walls, one of them, then I'm stuck. My only option will be, at some point, to Wild Weasel. Now, this is always the gotcha when it comes to engagement with plasmas, which is, okay, one of the things you can do in that situation would be to, if you knew you were, at the beginning of the turn, if you knew you were pinned and you weren't going to get away, then obviously you can, at that point, you can go to like speed 4 and you'll be fine. But, and you can have it so that you can launch Wild Weasels preemptively before the plasmas come out, which is good and bad. Good in that it might mess up the timing of your opponent. Bad in that your opponent, depending upon how the plasmas are loaded, can go, "Nyeh. You're going to launch a Wild Weasel. I'm not going to fire at it. I'm not going to kill it." Possibly, you might kill it. You know, might kill it with his phasers and just wait for it to disappear. Or might just fire with phasers, have it, you know, and just turn off. So you're down one Wild Weasel. He's still got his plasma. What do you do then? You know? Well, the only thing you can do, which is gets cranked up again, and what happens? Boom. If you got a Sminter speed chains in there, during that, then the plasma player, in this case the Gorn, can easily then go, "Oh, you're moving speed. You've voided any Wild Weasel that you have, and you can't Wild Weasel at that speed." At that point, he can launch his plasma, in which case then you have to do an ED, boom, and launch a Wild Weasel. You know, it's a tough situation overall versus deciding to deal it with speed. And if you have your, which means you have to keep your speed up, which means charging the particle cannons are slow going. Now, the biggest issue, of course, is going to be when it comes to Sartorian's power. Now, it's got three major weapon systems. It's got phasers, it's got shield crackers, i.e. web breakers, and it has particle cannons. Okay, so obviously, like any other ship, it's going to be a priority. What's the first thing you want to charge? Phasers. Especially given that the particle cannons are just like disruptors, and that you can charge them and fire them reserve power, which is good. Now, given that, the question is: do you charge, as you've charged your phasers, do you charge your particle cannons or shield crackers? Personally, I would probably charge my particle cannons first because of the range. And then of course, then there's the issue with shield crackers. They're shield crackers, which means that they will do damage to shields. But as soon as you knock down that shield. Those shield crackers don't do anything. They won't do any damage to the internals of the ship. They don't cause internals. They just, the idea of a shield cracker is to bring down the shield, or at least damage the shield so that it can then be brought down fully, or mainly to bring down a shield so then boarding parties can come in, that's one of those things that's a very interesting interaction because of, just in case you didn't know, shield crackers, they don't fire at fire decision. That's not the end of the impulse. They fire during the shield segment. So right before you can actually do hit and run raids, you know, using your transporters, that's when the shield crackers fire. That's when you fire the shield crackers. And that's one of those abilities that's built in the shield crackers, in that if you want to, what you can do is you can use the shield crackers to find a weak shield. Does it work that way? Rarely. I've yet to run into a situation where I've actually used it in that case. Most of the time, you just use it as an additional weapon. It's kind of a announcing that you're about to fire thing. It's like using a dizzy dev, in that you're announcing that you're going to be doing a displacement. So most probably that means you're going to be firing. So it's a kind of, the whole issue with SMB doesn't allow me to firing. Then don't get me started on the call for fire thing. Because I will go off on that. But anyhow, it's one of the two times where you can pre-announce an action, which tells you most probably what's going to have an action later. I.e., shield crackers. If you fire shield crackers, most probably you're about to fire your weapons afterwards. The only time I don't think I've ever not fired them together. Meaning, kind of using as a dink. Okay, did I hit shield reinforcement? Versus looking for a non-reinforced shield because of normally. See, here's the thing. That might be the case in fleet play, not in duels, because in duels, the thing is that if you hit the reinforcement. The whole idea in that case is having it so that the shield cracker removes that reinforcement from that shield. That's what you're hoping for. So using it as a way of testing for shield reinforcement is kind of pointless. So in duels, I don't see that really working, You can try it. The only time I can imagine ever doing it is against an Orion, where I've got the opportunity to fire the shield cracker at him. Say, okay, is this actually his reinforced shield? Because see, here's the thing. With the Orions can actually have a great number amount of power. And especially if they're doubling everything and you see all that power, it's like, okay, where is he putting it? You know he's got a shield heavily reinforced. You just don't know which one. Which probably it's going to be one that he's going to give you, offer it to you. But you might outsmart him, or he might outsmart himself. I've done that. That's why shield reinforcement and me don't really go together. I've had too many issues where, it's going to end up in the shield, and I completely, wrong shield. All my reinforcements on the wrong shield, and then I do something really stupid sometimes, which is, I've done in the past, which is try to get it so that the opponent gets on that shield, and that really messes up my overall movement for the turn. So, you know, instead of just letting it go and let him hit a non-reinforced shield and keep the positioning better, that I give up on the positioning and he gives my opponent a better position overall when it comes to play. So when it comes to Saltorium against the Gorn, what would I do? What I most probably would do is it's a double-edged sword. What I would probably be doing is I would fly fast, which means I would only overload. You have the particle cannons up to overload, and then I would probably keep up my speed to fly around, fly away from the plasma, and not rely on wild weasels. But of course, given that I will probably never have an opportunity to actually knife fight a Gorn, which overall I'm not sure I really won't be in that situation, I will probably still charge the wild weasels just in case I get into that situation where speed won't is not the solution. But overall, rely on speed to get me out of the hairy situations. Now, the tough part about that overall is by using speed is that not fully overloading my protocol cannons, therefore I'm relying on speed. The question is, do I need that speed? You know, at the beginning of the game, possibly not. But at the same time, the one thing that you always have to worry about is that if you want to use speed later on, then you have to discharge. You might have to discharge part of your particle cannons. You know, because yes, you got 5 points of power, but okay, in your capacitors for turn one, I want to go faster, so you tone down your particle cannons from fully overloaded, to the full capacity down to 3, which is enough for one overloaded shot. Now you have to announce that you've announced that you've released 2 points of power from all of your particle cannons. So he knows where your extra power is going, and that you actually now only have 3 points of power in your particle cannons. You know, so you've pretty much just announced that. You know, that's why most of the time you don't want to do that at all. Obviously, there's one thing to keep in mind. Now, I've rarely had the opportunity to do this, but I'll mention it anyway, which is the particle cannons have another feature other than using capacitors, which is one of those things I love. Because the great thing about capacitors is that it gives you the ability to be very flexible. You can either fire, if you have, in the case of 3 points of energy into the particle cannons, you can fire either as an overload or as a standard. Now, there is one possibility that I just thought of, which in theory you can do, which is you can start the game with only 2 points of power in your particle cannons. Now, that's instead of being 6 points of energy, it's only 4 points of energy. And in that case, if you want to overload, then all you got to do is use reserve power to overload your particle cannons. You want to? You can do that. When I do that? Probably never. But if you really want the extra speed, you can do that. In mid-game, yes, I've done that. I've done it so that I said, you know, I just want to have a standard load in my particle cannons. And then if I need it, I can bop it up by one. See, that is one of those beauties of the particle cannons versus disruptors. Disruptors, to overload A disruptor costs 4 points of energy. To overload a Saturnian particle cannon, 3 points of energy. So yes, it doesn't. It's hard. The hit sucks compared to a disruptor. But at the same time, it has less costs less power to overload. So that part is nice because unlike the Klingon or whatever, any ship that has four disruptors, you can have four particle cannons, which are only have a capacitor for one for a standard shot, and then you can use your batteries to overload all four. You can't do that with a disruptor ship. So that's one of those benefits of the particle cannon, of course. And then there's the other feature, which is also a detriment because of the particle cannons can fire twice in a turn. Now, just like the Type C racks of the Zinti. The Type C racks on the Zinti, for those of you who don't know your drone racks, a Type C drone rack in this with the Zinti have allows you to launch two drones per turn. But the problem with that, just like that weapon, the particle cannon and the Type C drone rack, both require 12 impulses delay between firings. Now, that obviously puts a cramp in your style if you're used to firing like an impulse 25 and be all ready for impulse 1. No, that don't work. It just means you can't be as close, or you have to fire your particle cannons earlier. Most of the time, you probably wouldn't be worrying about firing over the turn break, you know. But it is what it is. So I would probably fly around fast, and I would, you know, the best thing would be, I think, is to the standard counter versus a plasma attack, which is run away. As the plasma gets launched, you run away. Now, that the tough part about that part is going to be your turn mode. What you might have to do is go speed, you know, like 24, possibly even crank it down to 17, and then crank it back up to 24. I'm just saying that because what you might need is an additional turn mode so that you can turn your ship around so that you can have those opportunities to fire upon the Gorn. And of course, that's going to be one of the few times, if you have 3 points of energy in your particle cannons, that's one of the few times you can actually, it might be actually a possibility with this arrangement and flying basically a plasma ballet to a certain degree, that you're going to be keeping up the range. You're not going to be getting to overloaded range. And you can fire two standards. I'm assuming on the same shield. That's what you might do. So I think the Saltorian versus the Gorn is an interesting battle in that the Saltorian is flying an uphill battle overall because just it's one of those ships that has nothing, zero ability to distract the opponent. If you want, unless you call doing suicide shells the ability to distract, no. They're slow. They're one of those things that you use for surprise when you're close in, but that's about it. So I think overall, you know, the Saltorian, as I said, it's an uphill battle for Saltorian. Most likely it will lose, but you can still beat the Gorn. The important thing is timing. You have to mess up with the Gorn's timing when it comes to launching of his plasma and try to get him when he's down. If not one, if you really can get him down two plasma S's, you're pretty good, because even if he has two plasma Fs, yeah, that will definitely deter you. But if you can get the if you can just wait them out a little bit, they can go. They'll go from 20 to 15 so fast, and then from 15 to 10, quite fast too. So those die relatively quickly. So that's a good advantage, because if you can just get the timing right, slow down maybe on your approach. Or, what's actually, that'd be an interesting idea, which is speedily head towards him and then slow down to mess up with the timing. He's going to think you're going to be coming in fast and furious, and then you slow down and you can get it so that the plasmas hit in the next range. Okay? Well, I think we'll end it there. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.